Healing is a term we sometimes, but not often, use in medicine. What does healing mean? What changes take place in our body when we heal? And how can you begin your own journey to health and healing? Hello, and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information from the world's leading experts on how you can live healthier and longer through the way you eat, move, think, connect, and recover. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician scientist and lifestyle as medicine pioneer with over 25 years of experience in patient-centered clinical care. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Anoop Kumar. Dr. Kumar is co-founder of Health Revolution, creator of the Health Jumpstart Program, host of the Healing is Possible podcast, a frontline emergency physician, and author of the books Michelangelo's Medicine and Is This a Dream? He was drawn to the philosophy of Vedanta early in his life, especially its profound views on the complete anatomy of the human being, a perspective missing from modern medical science. Informed by this, he communicates a compelling narrative about the power each person has to heal and discover what true health means. Dr. Kumar is board certified in emergency medicine and has a master's degree in management with a focus on health leadership. Anoop, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for that introduction. I'm really looking forward to jumping in and talking about health and healing with you.
Yeah, so you have a really interesting perspective because you are an emergency room physician, and yet you are passionate about healing. So tell me how your path kind of brought you to where you are today.
Well, I say that I am an emergency physician, and therefore I am very interested in healing. You know, as you know, in the ER, we see the heart attacks and the strokes and the sepsis and the, you know, everything from newborns to centenarians and everything in between. When you see that over and over, you can't help but think, what are we doing? You know, actually, I remember this moment in residency. It was my intern year, and I was in the emergency department. It was, I don't know, 2 or 3 a.m. on a Monday night. It was just a crazy night. So many things coming in. And it was a particularly terrible episode when a young baby, just a few months old, came in and wasn't breathing, and we had to resuscitate the baby. And after that, I remember everything kind of coming to a pause, you know, as if there's this maelstrom and somebody just presses pause, and all the din and the roar just went silent, it seemed. And this statement popped in my mind, which was, we don't know what health is. You know, somehow in that moment, after all that was happening that night, just occurred to me that we keep talking about healthcare, but there's very little interest in looking into what do we mean by health? What does it really mean? And I was primed for that in many ways because, as you said, I was exposed to the philosophy of Vedanta as a child. It's an Indian philosophy that there are many interpretations, but the particular one that really spoke to me is called Advaita Vedanta, which means that underneath all of the experiences of multiplicity and underneath the varied appearances and experiences of this world, of this universe, is something fundamental and common to everything and everyone. And not only that, that this, which is fundamental and common, is not abstract. It's not something away from someone. It's not something that you have to leave your life for, but it is palpable in and through every moment of our lives if we can attend to that. And perhaps even most powerfully, that when we do that, there is a healing that happens. And in some sense, everything that we are looking for, everything that we're going through, is in some way to kind of discover this portal that exists within ourselves unto this deeper healing truth. So being exposed to that and then somehow being in emergency medicine, those two worlds came together. And at some point, I couldn't keep quiet about that any longer.
Now, this night in the ER was, now how many years ago is this?
So my intern year was 2007, so over 15 years, about 15 years.
So you had this core philosophy just from growing up and then this experience in the ER. And how did that influence what you did after that?
I had been thinking about this for a long time. I've been thinking about it since elementary school, really, and experimenting with mind and experimenting with, you know, body and what people were talking about, mind-body divide and all these things for a long time. And obviously that came into a focus when I started medical school. But really when I got to residency and that intern year is when I couldn't hold it in anymore. And so these worlds were meeting, essentially what I see as a more complete view of the human being, which I frame in terms of anatomy, because anatomy is really how we see the human being in medicine, in modern medicine. So you have this complete view of human anatomy juxtaposed with a very incomplete and partial view of human anatomy, which is the Atlas of Human Anatomy that we all have in medical school. And when those two come together, you might, you know, it's almost like this half and this piece, they're not forming a perfect circle. They're mismatched. And so that's what compelled me to start speaking about that mismatch. That's when I started writing articles and giving talks, eventually wrote a couple books. And now that's led to Health Revolution. We have a podcast that talks about people who heal from all kinds of conditions just by using nutrition, movement, connection, and rest, what I call primary medicine. Well, how do you do that? Some of that is not understood in the biomedical view. Why? Because of that incomplete model of anatomy. You know, so that's how like these two worlds came together and how I started communicating about that.
Yeah. And when you talk about healing, so, I think we sometimes use terms and like you said, they're not tangible. Yeah. And how do you think about healing?
Well, let me start with health. I think about health as the ongoing development of human potential. It's not a destination. It's not a place one gets to. It's this process, this continuous ongoing development of human potential. And healing is what we experience along the way. So healing can be interpreted across a broad range. You know, healing, first of all, when it's commonly used, it's often thought of as miraculous cures from a disease or reversal of a disease. Well, you know as well as anybody that a lot of the things we consider miraculous, once you bring it into a frame of understanding, it's no longer a miracle. Now it's called science, right? So we know, for example, using whole foods and plant-based diets, that heart disease can be reversed. In fact, we've interviewed those people on our podcast, you know, that decided to not do surgery and other techniques and or medications and rather went this route. Everybody has to choose their own path. The point is that it's possible. So that's one kind of healing where disease is reversed. Another kind of healing is where we improve our general well-being, right? So it doesn't have to be that a person has a diagnosis, but we don't feel that well, or maybe the energy level's not high, or the focus isn't great, or I'm getting anxious from different things. Well, that also can be a healing because we're becoming more whole. Just as in the case of heart disease, where there is a partial blockage in the coronary artery, and now as that the cardiovascular system becomes more whole, it heals. Similarly, with general well-being, as the person becomes more whole, sees more of themselves, releases some of those suppressed emotions, as they become more whole, that is experienced as healing. But then also what we call spiritual insight, right? Or spiritual evolution, that too is a kind of healing. That again is a person seeing themselves in a more whole perspective. And healing also does not have to be reversal of a disease. So it can be that the body goes from state A to state B, or it goes from state C back to state B, back to state A. That can be one kind of healing. But another one can be the body is in some state and this person's experience of that changes, that the meaning they find in that changes, that the sense of purpose or clarity that opens up changes. And that too is healing. So what healing means depends on the person and depends on their own path in life. That's the beauty of healing. When we activate what we call primary medicine, these engines of nutrition, movement, connection, and rest, some kind of healing always ensues. And it's always customized for that person in that way, whatever it means to them.
And I want to get into each of those four main pillars of healing. But before I do, for an individual who is on this journey to healing, is there a way for a person to know that they are healing?
So if health is the ongoing development of human potential, and the experience of healing are the experiences that come with that, then to me, healing is those small aha moments that come to us. Like we do one thing, we try one thing, and then we feel, just a little bit of a release. There's a little bit of insight. There's a little bit of clarity. There's a little bit less tension, right? That's an indicator. That's a compass that says, yes, that's pointing true north. right? So let me do a little bit more of that. Not that I am just running from something or avoiding something. That's not really a release. That actually builds tension in the system. But when we're on the right track, we get these small aha moments and this release in the body and this opening up and the ability to consider more perspectives. All of this starts to open up. To me, those little aha moments are the building blocks of what we call healing. And all of those strung together is what somebody experiences as disease reversal, as improvement in their day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. Can you start talking us through how to kind of leverage movement and nutrition, et cetera? I know there's a lot there, but can you start talking through the process and the things that people can begin to do?
Sure. So for nutrition, movement, connection, and rest, a couple of simple things that everyone can do. I know you focus on whole foods and plant-based food as well. So under nutrition, that is a huge category right now that we know, in fact, just by removing processed foods, and of course, you're going to replace that food, so it's not going to be processed foods. So just by removing processed foods and eating whole foods, I don't know what percent, a quarter to 50% of so many conditions would improve, right? Just because the body is now actually getting nutritious, real food, which is what the body and the mind are constituted from. So that's one simple thing, is removing the processed foods. Nutrition is also this, what we're doing now, right? Nutritive content, allowing new ideas to come forth, thinking about new things. Nutrition for the mind is so important. So if I'm making changes with the body and eating certain kinds of foods, but then I'm bombarded by stuff that's telling me how nothing's going to ever work or it's a doomsday scenario for everything. Now, that also creates a contraction in the body and it also affects our motivation. So nutrition, all of these, movement, connection, and rest, have to be considered across the entire human system, mind, body, and so on. So that's a couple simple things with nutrition. With movement, we know about exercise. In fact, I saw a study in the European Journal of Cardiology, I believe. Just recently I saw it, and they showed that even less than 1 hour of exercise in a week, I'm not saying we should cut it down to 1 hour in a week, but even that shows significant improvement in morbidity and mortality from, I believe, heart disease and cancer. So, you know, what we're seeing is that exercise is important, but it may not be exercise as we've always thought of it. It may not have to be 1 to 2 hours every day, 7 days a week. Not everybody is going to do that. But movement can be simply moving the body, range of motion. Range of motion is critical, right? So many breathing conditions happen because of a posture issue, tension in the shoulders, stress in the neck, and therefore the lungs can't expand fully. So movement is our range of motion. That's one thing I do every day, is take every single one of my joints through their full range of motion. Movement is breathing, right? We know the usual breathing that happens, the tidal volume between here and here, these shallow breaths. And, you know, you can look at somebody's respiratory rate and volume of breath and probably predict a state of mind, right? Up to a certain limit. And the deeper and slower the breathing, the more likely that mind is going to be calm. In fact, this is a technique I use in the ER. If a patient is very anxious, I'm more aware of my breathing when I go into the room. Because at a subconscious level, our two breathing techniques are going to be competing. And one is going to win out and influence the other, in a sense, right? So whoever is more steady in their awareness, in their presence, is more likely to be able to influence the other. And hopefully that'll help to calm this person down if they are anxious. So movement is also, in addition to exercise, range of motion, it's also breathing. Another huge one, Sharon, it would be a co-number one with anything else, is moving our emotions and the impact of emotions that have stayed in our system for decades. Something that happened when I was 4 years old, 8 years old, 12 years old, you know, middle school, high school, somewhere. And something that is very easy for anyone to overlook and say, well, that wasn't a big deal, which is often the problem, is that all those things are considered not big deals, but they lodge in the human system and they create physical issues, which, going on a slight tangent here, but I have to bring up the issue that nowhere in human history has anyone ever found the line that divides the mind from the body, right? We talk about them as two things. And fortunately, we're starting to talk more and more about mind-body connection or mind-body integration. But in my view, there are no two such things. The mind flows as the body. just as water flows as a river. You can see the river because of the pattern of the water, the current of the water, the course of the water. Therefore, it becomes visible. So we don't think of the river as just water. We think of it as that rushing movement of water. And that's what the body is. It's the patterned mind that we see. And that is exactly why on our podcast, we have people who had Crohn's disease for decades, pain, admissions to the ER, fever, infections, even bowel resection, multiple immunosuppressants, you know, oral meds, rectal meds, everything, with minimal improvement, one hypnosis session, and her symptoms went away. And she was able to tell a story about how when she was a child, she would, through this pain, she would be able to actually engage with her parents more. And if anybody had told her that, she would have been very angry. But when she arrived at that realization herself, she felt a release and her symptoms went away. That's just one of innumerable examples. We have no biomedical explanation for that because we have, again, from an anatomical perspective, separated the mind and we simply look at the patterned mind, which is what we call the body. So that's movement, exercise, range of motion, movement of the breath, movement of our emotions, movement of our creativity, you know, asking, what do I love doing? What do I love talking about? You know, what gets me lathered up? You know, expressing that is so crucial. So that's movement. Connection, can spend an hour on this, Sharon. Connection, I'd talk about it in three main phases, which is connection with the planet, connection with ourselves, and connection with others. Connection with the planet, I think, is one of the most important that's overlooked because there is a lot of focus on meditation, mindfulness now, but one of the most important connections is directly with the planet. And by that, I mean feet in the soil, feet in the ocean, feet in the sand directly. We know there's electron transfer happening between the human system and the earth system. You know, these are systems that are interfacing. We wouldn't put a socket into an outlet that's covered in rubber, right? We wouldn't expect that socket to work. We wouldn't expect there to be flow and equilibration. But that's kind of what we're doing when we're always in shoes and we're outside. Not just feet in the soil, but fresh air in the lungs, that direct connection, sunlight on the skin, direct connection, you know, wind blowing on the skin, direct connection. These are very important. That's connection with the planet. Connection with ourselves, of course. Who are we? Who am I? And what am I doing here? We have studies that show the significant importance of existential questions and their relationship with conditions like depression or anxiety, right? And these are questions that we're either taught not to ask or we're taught that they happen in philosophical context or spiritual context. Instead of just saying, this is one of the biggest questions in life. If you're a human being, it's relevant, right? Regardless of how you might think of yourself culturally. So who are we? What are we doing here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? Why? How? Right? And then moving from that space of curiosity and openness into a kind of silence, because the answers to these questions aren't conceptual or verbal, right? The answers arrive in the right context. So this is connection with oneself and of course, connection with others. We are interrelated beings, right? My carbon dioxide enters you, your carbon dioxide enters me and vice versa. We're connecting right now through the gaze, right? Some will say that you're miles and miles and miles away from me. And some people who are hearing this or seeing this might be thousands of miles away. But then how are they feeling this? There is a palpable feel to this conversation. So isn't there something more than just physical space and time? Surely there is in connecting with others. So these are the aspects of connection, planet, self, and others. And finally, rest. Of course, sleep is the obvious one. And there's also something to knowing how to rest even when awake, knowing how to pick up the mind like a pen and use it. And then when it's done, set it down and not having to fall asleep just to set the mind down, to set the thinking down. So these are a few insights into nutrition, movement, connection, and rest. And we elaborate on these more and provide exercises in our Health Jumpstart program.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think that the implementation is always challenging, right? I think on one level, for example, being able to rest and knowing when to, you know, kind of put that pen down, if you will. Intellectually, a person can know it, and then actually implementing it into their life is really a hard process. Can you, if we, for example, just looked at rest, can you delve a little bit deeper into what are ways people can unwind? Because I find so many of the people I talk to And my patients have, you know, can fall asleep, but have trouble staying asleep. Like they wake up in the middle of the night and it takes a few hours for them to be able to wind down again. And by then it's time for their alarm clock to go off. So they're getting chronically sleep deprived. Yeah. What are some tactics people can use?
I think in terms of waking up in the middle of the night, what's happening is there is some activity in the mind that is expressing and that is causing that mind to come awake again, right? There's something that's not allowing that activity to come to a state of rest and stay there. There's something that, in a sense, wants to be said or wants to be heard. And so one of the keys that can help is during the waking state, while the mind is awake, actively exploring that. This is exactly why for some people, when they start meditating, they'll say, this is impossible. This is so difficult because all this stuff is coming up and I can't quiet my mind. And what I say is that's exactly what's supposed to happen. That's actually the sign that you're doing it right. Because all this stuff that has been latent for a long time and that has been kind of covered up just to kind of deal with the checklist of life, go from A, B, C, D, E. Now, when that A, B, C, D, E is not there, that is commanding our attention, the lid kind of opens up and everything else starts to come up. And we say, well, I'm not doing anything. Why am I so active or why am I restless? Why is all this stuff coming up? Because it never had a chance to express. So that's one thing that anybody can do is spend 5 minutes sitting there and noticing the things that are coming up while knowing that this is perfect and this is exactly what's supposed to happen. The mind is not supposed to be quiet during these 5 minutes. That happens eventually. But in the beginning, it's supposed to be active. It's supposed to release. And the things that come up then will have the insights, will have connectors to what the things are that need to be addressed that will eventually lead to rest. So there's no, it's not a shortcut. You know, there's no quick thing that a person can do. But surely, whatever it is that is arising in that person's mind or that it's happening in that person's body, insight can be gleaned into that by doing something while awake and starting to notice what's coming up.
When you do your ER shifts, I'm sure they're extremely stressful. How do you transition to a rest state after a really intense, stressful shift?
The same things that I just talked about, nutrition, movement, connection, rest. So it can be drinking water and having a bunch of blueberries or eating something when I come home. If it's warm outside, I do go outside without my shoes on. I go on the lawn and I have my feet in the grass. I might do some stretching out on the grass to the range of motion for the body. I might just sit quietly and do more of a focused kind of meditation during that time. I'll say that over time, what happens as one experiments with these, by the way, I really started experimenting with all of these as kind of a complete solution after my residency, right after my residency, when I felt like I needed to get more control over what's happening, when I needed to more of a balance in my life. Before that, I was very focused on simply mind, connection, introspection, meditation. I'd gone very intensely into that and discovered many wonderful things. But in terms of a complete solution and in seeing my patients and wanting to address health and disease overall, I saw the need for this more complete purview. And that's when I practiced all of these things. And that's where this comes from. So I do those exact same things. And over time, what happens is the mind almost at baseline is in a state of rest. So if I go into the ER now, it's very different than when I went in 10 or 15 years ago. And that's not only because of the experience. Obviously, with experience, things become easier. But it's not only because of the experience. It's because the mind itself is different now because of the cumulative results of doing these things over many years.
It's like a muscle that you're essentially building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is fantastic. So, Anoop, with the time that we have left, is there anything you want to share with our listeners that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
Well, I want to focus on the understanding of health as the ongoing development of human potential. And I want everybody to know that you do have a tremendous potential to heal, whatever that means to you. And there are lots of options that are well studied, that there is good literature on that suggest how we can heal, whatever that means to you. And beyond the science, there is something more to us than just the physicality of what we are. And that's something that we all tap into intuitively And that's something that I feel strongly we need to look at as part of our framework for health. And that's why we developed this Health Jumpstart program.
Yeah. And for people who want to learn more about where they can, well, about you and, you know, things you've written about, as well as about the program, where can they get information?
You can visit healthrevolution.org. And there we have our Healing is Possible podcast. We have the link to the Health Jumpstart program. And we have some articles on there as well about different kinds of healing and where you can learn more about my work.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Anu, thank you for all the work that you do and for all the ways you contribute to healthcare. I think we all wear quite a few different hats. And thank you for the work that you do and for the information that you've shared today.
Thank you, Sharon. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. I really love hearing feedback, so please leave a review to let me know what you think and rate this podcast. The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness and is copyrighted by Emory University. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.